3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for being here once again as we are getting closer and closer to the regular season. It's right around the corner. So in this episode, well, wait till we get to the end. For those of you that, we have a lot of new listeners, so for those of you that don't know kind of the way this usually works, we usually have a little history, a little Mariners history tidbit at the end of the podcast, sometimes in the middle, but usually at the end. And I think you're really going to enjoy the one today in particular. Dave Niehaus reading Casey at the Bat. That's going to come up at the very end. It's a classic. I've played it before a few times, but it's one that I will bring back every so often because it's sensational. Dave Niehaus reading Casey at the Bat. That's going to come up at the end. Shannon Dreyer from 710 ESPN covers the Mariners, obviously, and has great insights and has been there at spring training all spring training long. So we'll talk about camp as it winds down. That's going to come up as well. Couple of reminders, you can always find me on Twitter at Gary Hill Jr. and you can email me as well anytime. GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. Questions, thoughts, whatever. Send it my way, Twitter, email. Those are always welcome. And I have a request as well, if you could be so kind. If you're on iTunes, if you could rate us, preferably highly, but you know, it's your choice. If you could rate us and leave some feedback, that would be outstanding. It really helps us out. I always feel weird asking for that. Please like me. But you know, for those of you that have been around for a while, you know that that sort of thing helps, and it helped get us to where we are now. So I certainly appreciate it, and it helps the cause. So if you could be so kind, that would be outstanding. So that's my quick request. Before we get to Shannon, there's a couple things I want to get to. Felix Hernandez obviously pitched yesterday for the Mariners. Didn't go the Mariners' way yesterday. Felix Hernandez, a forgettable line, an inning and two-thirds, five hits, 700 runs, but, you know, spring training. So it is what it is. But, you know, the next time he takes the mound, it's for real. It is going to be opening day. And I started to look at Felix Hernandez and opening days, and it's just amazing. Again, I talk about it all the time with Felix Hernandez and what he has already done in his career at such a young age, and it's really remarkable. But firstly, on opening days, he has been lights out. 5-0, a 1.52 ERA on opening days. 53 and a third innings, 9 earned runs during that stretch, which is amazing. 52 strikeouts during that time as well. Mariners are a perfect 7-0 when Felix starts opening day, which is pretty amazing in itself. I started to look at it, too. I mean, here he is. He's still in his 20s, and he has started 7 opening days. And, you know, I started to think about where that fits in context of history, and it's pretty cool when I started to look at, you know, what individuals have done, starting pitchers have done for one club. And there are only 11 pitchers in the history of the game that have started more opening days for one team than Felix Hernandez has already done for the Mariners. This is going to be number 8 coming up for Felix Hernandez in just a handful of days. Only 11 pitchers have more than 8 opening day starts with their clubs. It's quite a list, too. So Steve Carlton for Philadelphia, he's got the most opening day starts for any one team. 14 opening day starts for the Phillies. And what's funny, second most, Robin Roberts, also of Philly, 12 opening day starts. And then Jack Morris with the Tigers, he had 11 opening days. Walter Johnson with Washington, he had 11 opening days as well. Tom Seaver with the Mets, he had 11 opening days. And then the 10s are awfully impressive. He had Warren Spahn with the Braves. He had 10 opening day starts. Bob Gibson with the Cardinals. Juan Marichal with San Francisco. All had 10 opening day starts for their clubs. And then you get to the nines. Steve Rogers with the Expos. You had Brad Radke with the Minnesota Twins. Had 9 opening day starts. And then the only active pitcher in baseball who's on this list. He's not with the same team, but Mark Burley. 9 opening day starts with the Chicago White Sox. There's a couple that have 8. So Felix will match Roger Clemens, who had 8 with the Red Sox. He'll match Niekro at 8 with the Braves, and Doc Gooden, who had 8 with the New York Mets. But that is already, and Roy Oswalt with the Houston Astros. He had 8 as well. But that is really exclusive company. And Felix Hernandez is going to join that list. And, I mean, how many more is he going to get? I mean, he can really climb that list, and already exclusive company. But good stuff. It will be great to see the King on the mound at home to start this season. Also, want to touch on Mike Zunino a little bit.
First pitch to Zunino. He swings, jumps on it, clubs it a mile high. This is gone by plenty. Zunino's second home run of the game. It finds the berm in left field. Zunino's 6th this spring. And the Mariners add to the lead. It's 7-4 Seattle in the 6th inning. Zunino, nothing cheap about that one.
7 home runs in the spring for Zunino. We're going to touch on him a little bit with Shannon in just a few minutes. But, you know, batting .353 for the spring. His OPS, 1.313. Again, you know, I don't put a ton of stock into spring numbers. But, boy, this is outstanding to see. And, you know, 6 doubles, 7 homers, but 6 walks as well and 51 at-bats. I mean, that is good stuff. And we talk about Mike Zunino and his potential. He's hit. I mean, he crushed the ball in college and the minors as well. You know his power, but bring that average up just a little bit, and we're talking about one of the great young catchers in baseball because we know what he is defensively. He's an outstanding defensive catcher, calls a great game, works hard with the staff, outstanding behind home plate. But he joins what is an exciting crop of young catchers in baseball right now. This is a good time for young catching right now in Major League Baseball. A lot of them in the National League, but you look around, there's some really good ones. Mesoraco from Cincinnati, I mean, kind of quietly last year. You know, batted .273, swatted 25 homers a season ago. Buster Posey, of course, he's just one of the best players in the game. You know, 22 homers. Drove in 89 last year. Hits for great average. On base constantly. I mean, a really good player. A star in the game behind home plate. Salvador Perez from Kansas City. He's a good one. Batted .260 last year. Swatted 17 homers. Gomes from Cleveland. A young up-and-comer. Hit 21 last year. Hit .278. And then there's like Grandal with the San Diego Padres. Or was with the San Diego Padres. With the Dodgers now. Has a chance to really make some noise. And then I think one of the more underrated guys in baseball, Jonathan Lucroy from Milwaukee, to me is an MVP candidate. Last year, 13 homers, 69 RBIs, hit over .300, played in 153 games as a catcher. Some of that at first base, but played in a ton of games and is tremendous defensively. I don't think he gets enough due nationwide, but he's just another one of the good young catchers in the game right now. And Mike Zunino is in that group, and that's a good group to be in, and it's exciting times. Can't wait to see how his season develops as this thing gets going for real. Speaking of getting going for real, time to check in with Shannon Dreher. You know her work. She covers the Mariners for 710 ESPN Seattle. If you're not following her on Twitter, I wonder why. Can follow her at Shannon Dreher. You can see her work. The blog is constantly cranking out, 710sports.com. But right there, she's been there the whole time, spring training, all month long. And the perfect person to talk to is spring training just days away from wrapping up. Well, Shannon, this is the time of year in spring training that we usually talk about all the roster moves that are about to be made and battles have been won. But, boy, this is a pretty non-eventful last week of camp when – you know, a couple of jobs that there weren't that many open jobs to begin with, but the ones that were, really have been settled already with shortstop for other reasons, second lefty in the pen, fifth starter. It's kind of an uneventful last week in terms of jobs won or lost.
It's pretty remarkable. I've never seen this before, but the roster's set. You know, you look at it right now, the trade of Erasmo Ramirez, all of a sudden you've got 27 left in camp. Two of them are injured. So you have a 25-man roster almost a full week before you start the regular season, which, again, I haven't seen. And there were so few questions coming in, yet we still had some surprises. Tyler Olson is still here, and, boy, he's opened up some eyes. And, you know, who would have thought, kid from Gonzaga, still a relatively high pick, it's in the seventh round, but he was a starter. Well, no more. He's going to be a lefty reliever out of the pen, and he really hasn't blinked anytime he's gone out there. It's been very impressive, and he's passed all the tests. He can go back-to-back, face one hitter. He can go three innings if need be. You know, we had that kind of eye-opening surprise, and we've had other surprises and guys that just really appear to have turned a page or taken a step forward. But and that was kind of the thing that struck you when you walked into the clubhouse the first day was, there just really aren't a lot of question marks.
Yeah. No, and you mentioned the trade of Erasmo Ramirez, and I don't think that's a big surprise. A guy that's shown some flashes over time, but, you know, just squeezed out. There's just not room when you look at the rotation, the depth there, and that ridiculous bullpen. I mean, any bullpen that sends Carson Smith out to the minors is a deep, deep pen. Just wasn't room for Ramirez at this point.
No, and even though Ramirez isn't here anymore, they still have depth because while you've got Carson Smith at depth for the relievers, you've got Rolandis Elias, who pitched a full year in the big leagues last year, as your depth at the minor leagues. And if you want to take it a step further, you've also got Jordan Preece, who made a very nice showing here in spring training. So, you know, the writing was on the wall early on for Erasmo. I think there was little doubt that he was going to be on another team at the end of spring training. It's nice that the Mariners got a player with an option that, you know, they'll find out a little bit more about and could be of use at some point. But I think as far as the bullpen battle goes, as good as Carson Smith was at the end of last year, you look at his numbers, he's kind of a slow starter. And I think also there's kind of a chemistry issue that even though there were some guys really kind of slow to come around in that pen during spring training, I think Lloyd's letting them keep their jobs and, okay, we're going to take this into the spring. You earned the job last year. You pitched there all last year. But you know what? Now we've got help down there. You've got to perform now. So I think rather than disrupting it, I think he's kind of going with his guys. But now it's his guys to back up at Triple-A, and it's going to be that way for just about everybody. You've got the rotation. I don't think they'll do anything with that other than I think we'll see more spot starts early this year than we did last year. I think they're going to try and save some innings, so I think you will see some optioning back and forth, and you will see some Elias. But then you've also got Brad Miller, who by default won the position. Right. If he's not performing when Chris Taylor is ready, I think you'll just see that battle continue. So I think things are going to be very interesting throughout the months of April and May.
You mentioned the rotation, too, and I'm not big on spring numbers, but Taijuan Walker's numbers are eye-popping. No matter what time of year it is, he has been sensational all spring long. What have you seen from him this spring?
Well, the first thing I saw from him was he was ready for spring training, and he just very matter-of-factly told me after his first start, I'm not here to work on anything. I'm here to compete for a job. So it was very interesting because, you know, James Paxton stayed in Seattle this offseason. He knew what he was doing. He didn't quite know what Taijuan was doing, but he was working pretty hard. He showed up in incredible shape, but the right shape, changed his workout so he was less likely to have some of the muscle pulls and problems that he had, got a little bit more flexibility. He's more comfortable in the delivery that he changed last year as well. And then the changeup. So we saw it at the end of last year, and you kind of wondered, is this for real? You really saw kind of the split change come out in that Toronto game, and you saw it as a difference maker. Well, that's completely and firmly in his repertoire right now. And he can use it for the strikeout. He can use it for the ground ball out. It's a pitch that he told me he never thought he'd really have. People kept telling him, if you have this pitch, you're really going to be something. And he tried it before, and no luck. And now he's got it. It's a hard change. It can be 89, 90 miles an hour. And, you know, a little bit different from Felix's and talking to Mike Bonino, but it is darned effective. And what we've seen from him in these outings is that he's basically had all four of his pitches for almost every start that he's made. He hasn't really had a struggle with that, but I think that's just kind of a testament to the work that he put in. Now the challenge is going to be to use those pitches correctly. I know that Lloyd McClendon got on him, and both of the catchers. Jesus Sucre was in it for the game that he was really not happy with. And then he got on Mike Zunino a little bit in the last game, and that they want to make sure that Taiwan is really mixing it up and really using what he's got right now. Don't let him just rely on 96, 97. He's so much more than that.
You know, when I look at this team and look at them compared to the rest of the division, I really think that James Paxton and in the same vein, Taiwan Walker can be the game changers for this team. Because I think you feel great about the top of the rotation with Felix and Iwakuma. But I think those two guys, Paxton in particular, can take this rotation from a good rotation to a potentially great rotation, given what we've seen from Paxton and what we've seen from Walker here in spring training. I think those two guys are really key to what this team can do in the regular season.
They are, and as smooth as it has been for Taiwan in spring training, it's been a little bit of a bumpier ride for James Paxton. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to watch and see what happens when the bell rings for him. But you know, we saw 2 years ago and just the briefest of glimpse of him, and then we saw last year as well, that when he is on, he is very, very special. And to have Felix at the top and then have Paxton come at you from the left side right after that. And then, boy, now it's going to be Walker, Felix, Paxton. If you go 5-4-3, it's going to be a tough go for opposing teams if,
yeah.
A, Taiwan's changes are real. He's able to take him into the regular season. And you know, I think you need to caution a little bit, and I said this so much last year. He's a young pitcher. Don't put too much on him too soon. And from what I've seen this spring, and not just, you know, in the numbers, but the quality of his pitches, I'm wondering if he can kind of take that restraint off. I mean, maybe he does have the possibility of putting up some pretty incredible numbers consistently this year. We'll see. I mean, you remember, he's only 22 years old right now. He hasn't been pitching for long. Changeup is new to him, but just the arsenal he has seems pretty remarkable. And then Paxton, does he have it all figured out? Is he okay after missing the first couple of weeks of spring training after flunking the agility drill? You know, is he going to be able to kind of kick it into gear very early? But if Paxton can be what he showed last year, and if anything we see with Walker is real right now, that's a scary, scary rotation.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned figuring it out a moment ago. So Mike Zunino, it looks like he has things all figured out right now. What have you seen from Zunino this spring?
He's just been amazing. And, you know, talk to him in the off season, and, oh, first thing I got to do is get some rest, and then really got to get, you know, my body back into condition and shape and ready to catch a gazillion innings next year. And Lloyd McClendon saying, we're not going to put too much on him in the hitting. When he gets to spring training, we'll work with him. Well, they do a lot of work on that. And he looks a little bit different at the plate. He looks a little more spread out. He looks a lot more balanced at the plate. And he's changed his approach as well. And it's funny because I think – What we were seeing last year is I think that when he was at the plate, the game was just speeding up for him so much. I think a lot of the strikeouts we saw, and he admits that he just really wasn't committing to a plan when he got to two strikes. And so he's worked on the mechanical side of things. He's also working on the mental side of things. And he told me that the biggest thing that he takes from spring training is he now has something good to go back to. If he gets off track a little bit, he can think back to the, you know, first week he had in spring trainer, or most of spring training for that matter, where he had the right feel of the plate, where he was able to slow things down, or he wasn't trying to outthink the pitcher in some situations. So I think that little bit of success at this level, even though it's spring training, is going to make a big difference for him, because you know all the raw tools are there for him. I also know he's got a really good head on his shoulders. And then from the catching aspect, I thought that was really interesting. We talked to Lloyd McClendon this morning, and, you know, obviously he's a very good defensive catcher. He's a leader of that pitching staff, which is saying so much for a kid his age. But they're working with him on calling better games now. And the relationship that he has with Lloyd, it's just fantastic, where they're talking over after the games, well, in this situation you need to do this, or you're kind of leading your pitcher into trouble with that. They're not afraid to put a lot on his plate. He's been able to handle it. And I think he's just got such a huge opportunity to elevate his game this year, not just on the offensive side, but on the defensive side as well.
You know, it's funny. You look at this camp, and pushing the Chris Taylor injury aside, because that was obviously a big loss for the Mariners. Other than that, I mean, it was a pretty smooth camp. Healthy, guys got their work in. I think for a contending team, in general, it's pretty much what you want out of a spring training.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think I think what that led to is it led to kind of a lull the last few days, and now they're kind of trying to ramp it back up. But, you know, the old adage that spring training is too long. Well, it's too long when you've got question marks. When you've got the team in front of you and it's all established, those guys are just chomping at the bit to get going. They're ready. The pitchers are stretched out. The hitters have all, they're all going to have 50 to 60 at-bats by the time they break. They want to go out and play real games at this point. So I think that there's been a little bit of a challenge for Lloyd just to kind of keep things going this last week because, you know, they're together. They're ready to go. They're looking around the clubhouse. It's almost empty because double size down here. Everybody's gone. And they're like, well, what are we doing now? Let's go.
Yeah, I think everyone's ready to go. No doubt about that. Ready to get this thing underway. What have you seen or heard from other teams in the division? Has anything surprised you, either good or bad, about the Angels, the Astros, the Rangers, anything going on in their camps?
Well, the one thing that I've kind of been keeping an eye on is what's been going on, particularly with the Angels, because to me, I mean, I think they're still the threat. They're the top dog until somebody knocks them down. And they were so good in the second half of last year. And obviously they've got the Josh Hamilton question kind of looming over their heads. But in some ways, I think that makes it better for them that he wasn't in camp. I think that helped them come together a little bit more. And the situation that I've been watching there is Garrett Richards. And, you know, they're expecting him. I'm hearing conflicting things. They originally said about 2 weeks in. I'm hearing more toward the end of April. But the games that he's been pitching in, he's been pitching in minor league games, they're saying he's looked very good and very strong. So he could be back perhaps a little bit sooner than later. That's a huge situation to watch because that's, you know, obviously their ace, their guy, and somebody that, you know, they're going to be very dependent on. That was kind of the tough thing for them going into the season is what was he going to be? But, you know, they're, again, a veteran club, kind of going through the motions of spring training. They know what they have and where they're going. So I think that's kind of been one of the bigger stories. And then the Rangers, you don't even hear about them. It just obviously took such a huge hit at the beginning of spring training. I believe they've got the youngest roster in baseball right now. The A's are the mystery that you always expect them to do, but they've been putting up a lot of offense down here in spring training, which is somewhat interesting. I just don't think you could ever count them out because they're going to consistently be making moves and kind of that chameleon thing that they do throughout the season. So we'll see. But it's funny because you don't hear as much about them because all the talk down here has been the team that's been in Peoria.
Yeah. Well, it's been crazy. I mean, you look at national predictions, wherever you look, ESPN, CBS, all the national guys, it is just a landslide for the Mariners in the AL West. It's really remarkable when you look at just all the predictions and how, you know, going in, at least national experts, quote-unquote experts, Mariners are widely picked as the favorite in the division.
You know, it's been so funny because I've been coming down here for so many years, and last year there was nobody in this camp. Nobody stopped by, and if they did, it was really short. And the first day that you showed up, three fans were waiting outside. This year there were a lot of fans from early on, and then any day you could look up in the clubhouse, hey, there's Peter Gammons. Hey, there's Ken Rosenthal. You know, hey, there's Bob Nightingale for the third time. It's everybody has been through camp to the point where, you know, there were multiple national reporters here on more than one day at the same time. So, you know, once I got past the A-Rod story, the Mariners seemed to kind of be the darling of the spring type story. Everybody was checking in, and it's a different perspective because they haven't been close to it. All they have is what's in front of them and the numbers on paper and what they know of these players, and they like it. And, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with what they're saying.
No doubt. Well, Shannon, thanks so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it and can't wait to see you here in a few days. You're going to be back home.
Yes. We're ready. I think we hit the dog days of spring. I'm good with coming home, too.
All right, there it is, Shannon Dreyer. Great stuff, as always. And now we're going to turn to a little history. Dave Niehaus reading Casey at the Bat. It is tough to beat this.
Ernest L. Thayer, Casey at the Bat, certainly one of the best-known American poems ever written. It's a mini epic that will probably outlive anyone who reads it. And in it, he captured the essence of a game that's humbled a multitude of Caseys since this classic was published in the San Francisco Chronicle way back in 1888. I'm sure you've heard it many times, and every time, it's a great story. So here it is one more time, Casey at the Bat. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A struggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast, they thought. If only Casey could but get a whack at that. We'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a Lulu. The latter was a cake. So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second, and Flynn a hug in third. Then from 5,000 throats and more there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley and it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his cap. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. And then, while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching in a haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Take one," the umpire said. From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone from the stand. And it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He singled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "He racked two." "Fraud!" cried the maddened thousands, and echo answered, "Fraud!" But one scornful look from Casey, and the multitude was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold, and they saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lips. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Well, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. We'll have more when we continue right after this.
See you later!